Okay, thank you very much for inviting me, and I'm going to present a new work, which is about frustration-free quantum spin chains. And these are my collaborators. Libor is a student of Daniel Nagach, who works on quantum complexity theory. And Ramis is a graduate student from MIT who works with Peter. let me begin by reminding you what are frustration-free chains and why we are interested in them. So so we have a chain of n d-dimensional qubits or spins. Our Hamiltonian is the sum of nearest neighbor interactions. And when we say that a chain is frustration-free, we mean two things. So first, each interaction must be a projector. And ground states of the full Hamiltonian must be zero eigenvectors of every individual projector. So all terms in the Hamiltonian can be minimized simultaneously. a simple example of frustration-free chain is the Heisenberg model. The Hamiltonian penalizes states that are anti-symmetric under a swap of adjacent qubits. So the ground states of this model are symmetric states, well, states that are invariant under any permutation of qubits. Another famous example is the AKLT chain. This is a chain of qubits or spins one. A Hamiltonian penalizes states for which adjacent spins one have total spin two. You can view the ground state as a product of virtual singlet states that are distributed between adjacent sites. For each site, we have two virtual qubits, and we project onto a three-dimensional symmetric subspace of two qubits. let me give you just one reason why these frustration-free chains are interesting. It is related to this idea of ground state preparation by the engineered dissipation. It appeared in these papers. The idea is that we can set up local dissipative dynamics that converges to the ground state of frustration-free Hamiltonian. Here I show a discrete version of such dynamics. At each step, we randomly pick a projector and measure its eigenvalue. If the eigenvalue is zero, we are happy, so we do nothing. If the eigenvalue is one, we randomize qubits in the support of this projector. If we repeat this sufficiently many times, we will get arbitrarily close to the ground state if the Hamiltonian is frustration-free. The point is that this dynamics is so simple that it could probably be realized in lab before a full-scale quantum computer can be built. my objective will be to explore this question, how entangled can the ground states of frustration-free chains under several restrictions. I'm interested in spins with sufficiently small local dimension, say qubits or qutits, the chain must have a unique ground state separated from excited states by a spectral gap, which is not too small, say polynomial in 1 over n. I will mostly focus on translation invariant chains. To quantify entanglement, I will use entanglement entropy of 1/2 of the chain, S of n. We ask how fast S of n grows when n goes to infinity. Let me briefly review the previous work. D is a local dimension of our qubits, And the smallest value of d for which we can achieve unbounded growth of S of n is d equals 21. And this was a result by Sandy Irani. And in this example, entanglement entropy grows linearly. And for d equals 2, a chain of qubits, we have a negative result by Zhenshi Chen, which basically says that we can always find a product ground state. So if d equals 2 means no entanglement. And the intermediate region between d equals 2 and d equals 21 is kind of less explored. Mawasach and his co-authors looked at random ensembles of spin chains in which we choose projectors randomly from the Haar measure for a fixed rank R. And what we found is that there are certain special values of R for which a chain is frustration free with probability 1. And all ground states are entangled. And as you can see, this special values of R can only exist if d equals 4 or larger than 4.
So the Heisenberg example that you gave in the first slide, that's not entangled, or one of the criteria that of the previous slide were not?
Well, strictly speaking, it does not have unique ground state, so we cannot even talk about entanglement. But for this Heisenberg example, we can always choose one ground state, which is a product state. So like product of all zeros.
But you're looking at the Hamiltonians with unique ground state?
I am interested in a unique ground state. So we can ask what is the threshold value of d above which we can achieve its unbounded growth of entanglement entropy. It could be d equals 4 or perhaps d equals 21. And our result says that the threshold is d equals 3. And so this is our contribution to this picture. I will show you an example of a frustration-free chain of Q-trits. It has a unique ground state, polynomial spectral gap, and logarithmic scaling of entanglement entropy. And in addition, it is a translation invariant. And so I will start by showing you the ground state of our model, and we call it the Motzkin state. Then I will explain how to construct a parent Hamiltonian for which Motzkin state is the ground state. And explain how we get lower bound on the spectral gap. I will label basis states of a Q-trit by zero, left, and right. And you should think of them as vacuum state, left bracket, and right bracket. So if you have a chain of n Q-trits, basis states are strings of left and right brackets, possibly separated by zeros. I will say that a string is balanced if it satisfies these conditions. Any initial segment must have at least as many left brackets as right brackets. And the total number of left brackets equals total number of right brackets. This is the rule that you usually use to place brackets when you write a paper or computer code, so it should look natural. For example, this is a list of all balanced strings of length 4. So we have a vacuum state with no brackets. We have 6 states with 1 pair of brackets, and we have 2 states with 2 pairs of brackets. And this is an example of unbalanced string. So if you look on this initial segment, it has more right brackets than left brackets. Balanced strings can also be viewed as paths on a two-dimensional grid that start and end on the horizontal axis without ever becoming negative. So each left turn means left bracket, each right turn means right bracket, and zero means going straight ahead means zero. And such objects are usually called Motzkin paths, and these are well-studied combinatorial objects. For me, it will be more convenient to think in terms of balanced strings of brackets. So if we have a chain of n q-tets, let me define the Motzkin state m sub n. And this is just the uniform superposition of all balanced strings of length n. So these are examples of Motzkin states for small n. And here I don't care about normalization, but it can be easily computed. And this Motzkin state will be the desired ground state of our chain. So first of all, let me give you some intuition why this Motzkin state is indeed highly entangled. So the point is that if we take some globally balanced strings, it may have unbalanced restrictions onto region A and region B. So we may have unmatched left brackets in region A, but have matching right brackets in region B, and vice versa. In particular, if we have P unmatched left brackets in A, we must have exactly P unmatched right brackets in B, because a string is globally balanced. And we will see that this number of locally unmatched brackets, P, is essentially the only source of correlations between A and B. For each value of P, we will have one term in the Schmidt decomposition of the Motzkin state. So this is example for n equals 4. In the first line, both A and B are balanced. In the second line, we have A and B have one unmatched brackets, and one unmatched bracket, and here both A and B have two unmatched brackets. Let me define this pairing Hamiltonian. It's going to be a sum of projectors that penalize certain states. We have two special projectors on the boundaries of the chain that penalize. So we penalize right bracket on the first spin and left bracket on the last spin. For each pair of adjacent q-tets, we penalize a three-dimensional subspace, which is spanned by these vectors. This is our main result. So it says that this apparent Hamiltonian H is frustration-free, and the Motzkin state is a unique ground state of H. The spectral gap is polynomial in N, and entanglement entropy of one half of the chain scales like log N over 2 with some additive constant. For small values of n, we can compute the gap numerically. So this plot shows this is log-log plot spectral gap as a function of a number of spins n, it suggests that the gap decays roughly as 1 over n cube, a bit slower when that. Our rigorous upper bound is 1 over square root of n. A rigorous lower bound is some inverse power of n, but the power is some very big number that we didn't even bother to compute. So My original definition of the Motzkin state was very non-local. So what I'm going to do next is to show you a bit more local definition. So we consider strings composed of zeros, left and right brackets of a fixed length. And I will say that a string S is equivalent to string T if we can go from S to T by sequence of these local moves. So for each pair of adjacent symbols, we can swap zero with left or right brackets, and we can create or annihilate a pair of left-right brackets from the vacuum. The reason why this equivalence is important is this lemma. It says that a string is balanced if and only if it is equivalent to the all zeros string. And this is almost obvious. For one direction, we note that the property of being a balanced string is preserved by each of its local moves. For the other direction, we note that if you take any non-zero balanced string, it must contain a matching pair of left-right brackets, which are either next to each other or separated only by zeros. And if you find such pair, we can apply these local moves to bring these brackets next to each other and annihilate them. And then we just use induction in the number of brackets. we can use this equivalence relation to partition the set of all possible strings into equivalence classes. So what we know is that the set of balanced strings coincide with one of these equivalence classes, namely the one that contains the all zero strings. Now, what can we say about the remaining equivalence classes? Let me define this special string CPQ. So it has P leading right brackets, Q tailing left brackets, and all remaining symbols are zero. So this string is not balanced unless P equals zero and Q equals zero. What we can show is that any string is equivalent to one and only one string of this form for some integers p and q. It means that we can label our equivalence classes by pairs of integers p and q, such that equivalence class pq contains this special string shown in the first line. The meaning of P is the number of unmatched right brackets, and the meaning of Q is the number of unmatched left brackets. Any string in the equivalence class PQ has this form. So we have this unmatched right brackets, unmatched left brackets, and intervals between them are filled by arbitrary balanced substrings. Now let me define this Hamiltonian H hat. This is the sum of projectors that penalize three-dimensional subspace spanned by states that I show here. So you can see that basis states of this forbidden subspace are in one-to-one correspondence with our local moves. It means that if some state psi is a zero eigenvector of H hat, such state must have the same amplitude on any pair of equivalent strings. to put it differently, if we pick any equivalence class PQ and form a uniform superposition of all strings in this class, it's going to be a ground state of H hat with zero energy. And such such states span the full ground subspace of H hat. And this is a good news because the Moskin state that we are interested in is uniform superposition of everything in the class 0, 0. So it's one of the ground states of H hat. Well, it remains to exclude the unwanted ground states that correspond to equivalence classes with P non-zero or Q non-zero. And the key observation is that there is something special about the class 0, 0. This is the only class in which strings never start from a right bracket and never end with a left bracket. So what we should do is to modify our Hamiltonian by adding this energy penalties on the boundaries. We penalize right bracket on the first spin and we penalize left bracket on the last spin. And then the Moskin state is unique ground state of this modified Hamiltonian. We are done.
So if you didn't have those terms, you would have degenerate ground.
Yes, I would have degeneracy like n squared because I can choose different p and q.
And there might be states in that ground state that were less entangled.
Well, some of the states are just product states. Say, if we consider this state.
Like n over two r's and then n over two l's and stuff.
We have only right brackets. This is a ground state without boundary terms. we can also use this equivalence classes to compute the Schmidt decomposition of the Moskin state, and it looks like shown here. Schmidt vectors are labeled by p, the number of unmatched brackets in A and B. And for each P, we have this uniform superposition of everything in the class 0P in the region A times uniform superposition of everything in the class P0 in region B. The Schmidt coefficients lambda P they depend on cardinality of these equivalence classes. And we can compute asymptotic approximation for the Schmidt coefficient. So as you increase p, the Schmidt coefficient grows roughly as p squared. Then it reaches the maximum value, which is of order 1 over square root of n. As you increase p further, it decreases exponentially. And the position of the maximum is also is of order square root of n. The dominant contribution to the entropy comes from the Schmidt coefficients on the left of the maximum. And this explains why we have scaling 1/2 times log n.
Sorry, I forgot. What is the value of p star?
P star is just position of this
mark. The value p, what does it stand for again?
Oh, p p means the number of locally unmatched brackets in region A,
yes,
which is the same as for region B. this Moskin state likes to have about square root of n of locally unmatched brackets. in the rest of the talk, I would like to sketch the proof of the lower bound on the spectral gap, and this is the most difficult part of our result. the first observation is that our Hamiltonian has block diagonal structure, and different blocks correspond to different equivalence classes. So we can consider this subspace HPQ, which is spanned by all strings in the equivalence class PQ. And this our Hamiltonian preserves any of these subspaces. So if you look on the first excited state of our Hamiltonian, it could be either the first excited state inside the balanced subspace 0, 0, or it could be a ground state with positive energy inside some of unbalanced subspace with non-zero P or non-zero Q. And so our job is to derive a lower bound on the spectral gap inside the balanced subspace and a lower bound on the ground state energy inside of any unbalanced subspace. And because I have limited time, I will only focus on the first part. It actually contains all essential ideas. if we restrict ourselves on the balanced subspace, we can ignore these boundary terms because we never have right bracket on the first spin or left bracket on the last spin. So the first step is to simplify our Hamiltonian using perturbation theory. So what I'm going to do is to decompose the full Hamiltonian into sum of two terms. H0 will be our unperturbed Hamiltonian and V will be our perturbation. And H0 is a sum of rank 2 projectors that penalize state in this two-dimensional subspace. So we can say that H0 swaps, it swaps zeros with left or right brackets. So this Hamiltonian H0 is simple enough, so we can analyze its spectrum. So you can see that it does not make any distinction between left and right brackets. So what it does is just swaps of zero with non-zero symbols. And so we can use this observation to map H0 to the Heisenberg chain that I showed you in the beginning and use known results about the spectrum of the Heisenberg chain. And in particular, we can show that the spectral gap decays as 1 over n squared. And I will tell you later what are ground states of H0. So the second term, V, is our perturbation. And so it is a sum of rank 1 projectors that create or annihilate pairs of brackets from the vacuum. if you want to use perturbation theory, our perturbation must be small. So what we are going to do is to introduce some small parameter epsilon and consider this deformed Hamiltonian H epsilon. the first observation is that the ground state does not depend on epsilon as long as it is positive. And this is because our Hamiltonian is frustration free. So we have just a bunch of projectors that have a common zero eigenvector. So if we reduce the weight of some of the projectors, it does not change the ground state. the second observation is that the gap of H original Hamiltonian is lower bounded by the gap of H epsilon. this is also very simple. Suppose we take the first excited state psi 1 of the original Hamiltonian H. So this is the gap of H. Sorry, you can probably cannot see this. psi 1 is a sum excited state of the deformed Hamiltonian H epsilon. So we have this bound. but on the other hand, we have this operator inequality. because when we go from H to H epsilon, we reduce weight of some projectors. And so we also have this inequality. So our job is to get lower bound on the spectral gap of deformed Hamiltonian H epsilon. So we will use this projection lemma proved by Kemp, Kitaev, and Regev. So let us define the first order effective Hamiltonian. So we take our perturbation V and restrict it onto the ground subspace of unperturbed Hamiltonian H0. And the lemma says that if spectral gaps, if we can prove that the spectral gaps of H0 and H effective are polynomial in 1 over n, then for sufficiently small epsilon, the gap of H epsilon is also polynomial in 1 over n. Sufficiently small epsilon means something like this. So the only missing part is lower bound on this quantity, the gap of H effective. How much time do I have? So using standard tricks, we can map effective Hamiltonian to a random walk on a certain graph that we call the dike graph. So first of all, let me remind you what are dike words. These are just balanced strings of left and right brackets, which have no zeros. So it's almost the same as balanced strings, but we don't allow zero symbols. So ground states of unperturbed Hamiltonian H0 can be labeled by dike words of length up to n. So length would vary between 0 and n. So on this picture, I just showed all dike words of length up to 6. So what is a dike graph? Vertices of the graph are just dike words, and edges of the graph correspond to insertions or removals of consecutive pairs of left-right brackets. For example, if we move from this node to this node, we add a single pair of left-right brackets. So I don't show you the transition probabilities of this walk, but we can lower bound the transition probabilities by something polynomial in 1 over n. spectral gap of the effective Hamiltonian coincides with the spectral gap of this random walk. So we need to show that it is rapidly mixing. For that, we use the canonical path theorem. So what we have to do is to, for any pairs of vertices on the dike graphs S and T, we must construct a canonical path connecting S with T. The path is just a sequence of edges on this graph. The family of the canonical paths must have a property that no edge of the graph is used by too many paths. So we don't want to overload any edge. So the precise statement uses this maximum edge load. So roughly speaking, this is just the total weight that flows through the chosen edge for some fixed family of canonical paths. In order to prove a polynomial bound on the spectral gap of the walk, we need to show that this maximum edge load is at most a polynomial in N. in order to prove this, we actually had to prove a new result about statistics of dike words. So it says that we can choose Well, this Dyke graph has a spanning tree key such that any node of the tree has at most 4 children, and all Dyke words of length 2k appear at the level k of the spanning tree. So the root of the tree is empty word, and any step away from the root means insertion of a single matching pair of brackets. So let me point out that 4 children per node is optimal, because the number of Dyke words of length 2k is the Catalan number, which grows as 4 to the k with some polynomial corrections. So if our spanning tree would have, say, 3 children per node or less, we simply wouldn't have enough space to accommodate all Dyke words. And our proof of this is non-constructive, so we don't know how to construct this spanning tree, but we can prove that it exists using a polyhedral description of matchings in bipartite graphs. Now suppose we have such a spanning tree, and how can we construct canonical paths? So suppose we choose some starting vertex S and a target vertex T, and we want to go from S to T along this graph. And any vertex on the canonical path will be represented as a concatenation of 2 Dyke words, U and V. And you can think about U as a partial implementation of S, as V is partial implementation of T. And our path, canonical path, will alternate between 2 types of step: shrink the word U and grow word V. And when we shrink U, we make a single step from S towards the root of the tree. And when we grow V, we make a single step from the root of the tree towards target vertex. And then we shrink U again, and we grow V, we shrink U, and again grow V, and at the end of the day, we arrive at our target string T. let's consider, our goal is to get upper bound on this maximum edge load, and let's choose edge of the graph which has the maximum load. So suppose this edge connects vertex A and vertex B. And and let's assume for the sake of argument that this edge corresponds to growing word V. We know that our starting string must be a descendant of U on the spanning tree, and our target string must be a descendant of V on the spanning tree. And because we have at most 4 children per node, we can bound the number of terms in this sum by something like this. This is, if we fix the length of strings SU, V and T, then this is the number of possible strings S, and this is the number of possible strings T. Then we use the fact that the steady distribution of the bulk depends only on the length of a string, and basically we have to sum this expression over all possible lengths of S, T, and A. And after some algebra, you get a polynomial upper bound on this. So we are done. let me conclude. I showed you an example of a frustration-free chain of qutrits, which has a highly entangled ground state and a polynomial spectral gap. And there are some interesting open problems. First of all, we can try to generalize this construction to the case when we have two types of brackets, say square brackets and curvy brackets. And whenever we create a pair of brackets from the vacuum, this pair is created in a maximally entangled state, like this plus this. And so we expect that this modified model will have a polynomial scaling of entanglement entropy. But of course, for that, we would need dimension of spins d equals 5. And we can also ask these questions about whether our construction is optimal and if we can do better. And let me conclude. Thank you.
I'm wondering about the scenario where you have a line with qubits, but the frustration-free projectors are on more than nearest neighbors. So I guess you could encode your construction into four local terms. What about three local on the line?
I think you can also encode it into three qubit projectors, but I'm not 100% sure.
So do you think that for d equals 3 log n is as good as we can get, or what is your intuition on this?
Well, my intuition is that for d equals 3 and frustration-free Hamiltonian, if you compute the Schmidt rank of A, it can only grow linearly with n. At least this is, this is true for all models that I tried to construct.
Yeah.
But I don't have a proof. So.
And the room is, because there's just not that many ways for things to be frustration free.
I mean, all models what I tried to construct have similar structure like this bracket model. So we have some local rules and we prepare superposition of all strings that can be generated by these rules. So it could happen that this is not the optimal strategy. And you could do better by adding some complex weights to your Hamiltonian. Yes,
question is whether this one region have a linear dispersion relation or the central charge, whether we don't know the conformal theory corresponds to this gapless state?
I discussed it with a physicist and they told me that this model is probably not, cannot be described by conformal field theory. So the intuition is that if you think about this model in terms of Motzkin paths, essentially it describes a Brownian motion on semi-infinite line constraint such that the Volcker starts and ends at the origin. And they know that for the Brownian motion, space direction is not equivalent to time direction. But for conformal field theory, we have rotational invariance, so the space must be equivalent to time.
So the dispersion may not be linear, that's what you're trying to say?
Yes, I guess it suggests that the dispersion is non-linear, is not linear.
So what is the situation for two types of brackets? What are the things that you can prove and what are the things that are open?
Well, I think we're pretty much confident that the entanglement entropy of one half of the chain grows like square root of n. But we have not tried to prove bounds on the spectral gap. So my intuition is that the gap should be the same as for the model with one type of brackets, but we don't have a proof.
So you can at least set up a chain where you need to say what you want to balance?
Yes, we can also prove that this modified Hamiltonian has a unique ground state, which is uniform superposition of all balanced strings with two types of brackets. But we cannot prove anything about the spectral gap.
questions? Well, thanks for getting that.
Thank you.